Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth podcast. It's not over yet. It's not over yet. Edition, as the Bengals look to rebound from a dismal night in Cleveland as they host the 2-6 Carolina Panthers on Sunday. Coming up, I'll talk to team captain Michael Thomas about the devastating loss of Chidobe Awuzie and his advice to the youngsters who are now getting thrown into the fire. It's a must-listen conversation. I'll also chat with Adam Rank from the NFL Network and NFL.com, who says the Bengals are still the team to beat in the AFC North. And finally, in our Know the Foe segment, we'll get the latest on the Panthers from their radio voice, Anish Shroff. The Bengals Booth podcast is presented by AltaFiber, future-proof fiber internet capable of delivering multi-gigabit speeds designed to take your home, business, and community to a new level. Elevate your connection with AltaFiber. Now, here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. It's the greatest thing since leftover Halloween candy. We live at the end of a cul-de-sac and in recent years haven't received many trick-or-treaters. Still, you have to be prepared just in case, so I always buy a healthy supply of Reese's Cups and Kit Kats. I was obviously in Cleveland on Halloween night this year, and when I got home, my wife informed me that only one kid showed up at our door. So, if I look extra pudgy in the weeks to come, you'll know why. Now, let's get to football. Chidobe Awuzie tore his ACL on Monday night and will miss the rest of the season. Pro Football Focus has him graded as the 25th best corner in the league this year, after ranking number 2 last season behind the Rams' Jalen Ramsey. Here's defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo.
Can you quantify what Chido means to your defense on and off the field?
Yeah, he's one. Again, I've got a lot of favorites, but he's one of them. Great human being to start. For as much as he cares in today's world about his teammates, you know, he talked to him, you know, obviously yesterday, and, you know, his first thing is I want to be involved. I'll still watch tape. I'm going to still be a leader. That, you know, he's talking about that as he's going to go have knee surgery. You know, that doesn't happen these days. And he's tells you who he is as a man, and that's what's most important to me. So irreplaceable on the field, irreplaceable in the locker room. That's just who he is.
Chido's injury occurred late in the second quarter on a night where the Bengals' other starting corner, Eli Apple, was out with a hamstring injury. During the game, Trey Flowers aggravated his hamstring. That left the Bengals with rookie Cam Taylor-Britt starting at one outside cornerback spot and rookie safety Dax Hill pressed into service out of position at the other. Taylor-Britt will almost certainly stay in the starting lineup as Awuzie's replacement and will have to quickly learn from his mistakes, like the one he made on the Browns' third offensive play on Monday.
First and 10, Cleveland from the 28. Jacoby Brissett under center, double tight ends in for the Browns. They fake to Nick Chubb. Brissett flings it downfield, and it is caught by Donovan Peoples-Jones. Tries to hurdle a Bengals defender, succeeds in going up and over Jesse Bates, and gets tackled at the Cincinnati 35.
Cam Taylor-Britt gambled. He rolled the dice and it came up snake eyes. He thought he could make a play on the football. Peoples-Jones, he tried to undercut it, make a play on it, and he didn't. And then all of a sudden, Peoples-Jones not only has to catch, he's running up the sideline and he hurdles. Looked like Edwin Moses hurdling over Jesse Bates.
Taylor-Britt gambled by diving in front of the receiver to deflect the ball, and when he missed, it became a 37-yard gain. Lou Anarumo was asked about that rookie mistake.
Yeah, I had a really clean, clear coaching point after that play. Don't ever do that again.
Yeah. Fair enough. Now, he did come reasonably close to getting the ball.
Yeah, I know. I almost won the lottery, too. So.
The Bengals Booth podcast is brought to you by Paycor. More than 29,000 customers trust Paycor to help them recruit, pay, engage, and retain employees. Learn more at paycor.com. All kidding aside, the Bengals have real issues at cornerback. Eli Apple told reporters on Wednesday that he thinks he'll be able to play this week, but somebody will have to come up from the practice squad to add depth, and there are two corners available, undrafted rookie Alan George and Marvell Tell, who last played in the NFL in 2019 with Indianapolis. For perspective on the injuries in the secondary, I turned this week to 11-year veteran Michael Thomas, who has many duties as one of the Bengals' captains. Michael, it occurred to me when you went out for the coin toss on Monday night in Cleveland that you couldn't lose. If you win,
right,
you take the ball. If you lose, the other team almost always defers. That's exactly the way it played out on Monday night. Has the pressure of the coin toss been removed?
Oh, absolutely. And that's crazy. Well, it's not crazy because you're such a smart, you know, guy and a student of this game, been around it so long, and you understand our philosophy. So that's exactly my thought process. It's like, all right, it doesn't matter if I win the coin toss. We want the ball anyway. So, it definitely took the pressure off for me. Normally, it's like, man, heads or tails, you know, we're trying to defer. But I'm grateful that Zach has told us, you know, we want to try to take the ball, and I don't feel that pressure going into coin toss anymore.
What's that moment like for you to march out there with a teammate or teammates for the coin toss to set the stage for a game?
Oh, man. It's a high honor, one, because you're pretty much elected as a captain. And, you know, sometimes we bring extra guys out there. If that game means a little something more to them, if they've played in that, you know, played for that team before, if they're from that city. But it's a lot of weight because you represent your team. You're sending a message to the other team. These are the guys that we're saying represents our team. So whoever you bring out there as your best, you know, like, okay, it's our guys versus your guys. And then clearly when it comes to the weight of the coin toss, you know, you're on national TV. Sometimes, you know, they televise that. Get a lot of people who sends us pictures, you know, are on social media, they're adding us, tweeting us and whatnot, showing us of those moments. So want to make sure, one, I don't mess it up. You know what I'm saying? I don't stutter. I don't, my voice don't crack. You know what I'm saying? I got to make sure I sound confident in whatever I call. But just knowing that, I represent my team, and that's a high honor. And, you command that type of respect.
We're visiting with Captain Michael Thomas. You were very emotional after the game on Monday regarding the injury to Chidobe Awuzie. Why does that loss in particular hit everybody so hard?
What Chido brings to this organization is more than just his position as a starting corner, a starting true number one corner in this league, probably one of the best to do it, in my opinion, regardless of what the rankings say, because of the attention to detail that he brings himself, that he demands from everybody in our secondary room. It forces everyone to elevate their game. And it's his presence, man. It's natural. It's organic. He's talking. He's a great teammate. He's open with everyone. He encourages others to, you know, have an opinion. He's okay, and he's very comfortable with telling somebody, hey, we need you. You got to pick it up. That ain't right. That ain't it. When you have a guy like that who is – authentic and brings that type of energy every day, it makes you want to come in this building and go to work. I got to be right for him. And to lose something like that, to lose that type of presence, and, you know, he'll be around, but it's different as a player when you're out there fighting and competing versus when you're kind of going through an injury, going through your process, and you're, you know, kind of on the sidelines. So to lose that, that's why it was emotional for me, and still is. He's in high spirits. Go continue to pray for him, and you know, just telling him trust his process.
Cheeto's out. Eli Apple missed last week's game with a hamstring injury. Trey Flowers aggravated his hamstring during the game. As an 11-year veteran and a member of the secondary, what will you do this week to try to counsel the younger guys who are going to be pressed into action?
I'll let them know, man. In this league, the game and profession that we chose to play, all you could ever ask for is opportunity. And when it comes, you have to take advantage of it. You don't know when it's going to come. You don't know if it'll ever come, but you have to prepare as if you believe the next play is going to be the play I get in, and it's going to be my time. And, you know, I can give them stories about what it was like my first game in the NFL and my, you know, getting my opportunity, and I can just constantly keep telling them why they need to prepare, why they need to prepare, because the perfect example was this past Monday night. It happens quick. Nobody accounted for that. Nobody accounted for that. And just like that, you got young Dex. You got to go in that corner, buddy. You know what I'm saying? Like, it happens fast, and they got to stay ready. Guys on the side like an AG, Alan George, Tyson Anderson, man, when my chance will come, when I'm going to get a chance to play. That's this league, man. Been around it, seen it a long time. I remember what it was like being an Alan George and praying for my opportunity. You know what I'm saying? Just young guys in general. Always got to prepare. Always got to prepare because you never know when it's going to happen.
Monday night's game in Cleveland was rough, but in last year's Super Bowl season, you had a loss to the Browns that was more lopsided than that game was. Having said that, is it perplexing when you have a night where everything goes wrong? Offense is bad. Defense is bad. Evan McPherson misses kicks. I mean, everything that you guys could have done poorly went poorly.
Yeah. Not a fan of these Halloween games. I'll say that. Yeah, like it was one of those when it rains, it pours type nights. But the beauty in that is we got a very short week. We got a very short week. And we get an opportunity very quickly to move on and go prove ourselves against another opponent on Sunday. And that's what I love about this league. You only get so many opportunities. 17 is only guaranteed. So you got to take advantage of every single one. And so we get another one this Sunday. Can't dwell on that as terrible as it was. Can't dwell on it. Let's move forward. Let's go find a way to get this one going into the bye.
The bye, as you mentioned, is a week away. You've gone through training camp. It'll be 9 regular season games after Sunday. How much does everybody look forward to that break?
I mean, not looking past this game at all, but clearly that break marks a huge milestone for a lot of reasons. Might get some cavalry, some reinforcements back, right? Get a lot of chance for the guys who are still competing, but, you know, nursing some things, but, you know, giving us everything, get a chance to heal up. A mental break just to say, okay, let's reset and refocus, right? But at the end of the day, we all know after, you know, pretty much getting hit in our mouth Monday night, we got to go take care of this one before we get to that bye.
The game is against Carolina this Sunday. P.J. Walker has replaced Baker Mayfield as their starting quarterback. I'm sure you saw the footage of his touchdown pass last week. It traveled 67 yards in the air. That's the longest since the NFL started measuring this stuff a few years ago. What was your reaction to that?
I mean, P.J. Walker's a guy who has had to earn everything he's gotten in this NFL. That's a testament to who he is as a player, as a person. So we got to know and understand, we're not going against, a second, a backup quarterback or a third string quarterback. No. We're going against a guy who has proven he can play in this league. He has some guys that he trusts. He has some chemistry with. He's going to try to get their balls to their playmaker. And we're going to have to put our best foot forward, best effort forward. And it's going to take all hands. You know, whoever's healthy, whoever's able-bodied, we're going to have to get out there. And, you know, we're going against a guy, like I said, who can play the quarterback position clearly at a high level. He's breaking records. You know what I'm saying? He's doing some stuff that you haven't seen. So we got to put our best foot forward, best effort forward. So I'll go get this one.
Last thing, your fellow members of the secondary have chosen you to be that guy who gives the little in the tunnel, pump them up speech right before you guys take the field. Do you think about what you're going to say during the course of the week, or does it strictly come from the heart and from the mind?
Definitely everything I say is authentic. It does come from the heart, but I will never go out there unprepared and not having something I've thought about and what to say. And like, what can I say to these men to either motivate them? I mean, it's the NFL. You shouldn't have to motivate nobody, but come on, dog. Like, there's cameras. There's cameras around. Like, this is the moment right here that all the guys are looking to you for something. You know what I'm saying? Give us something, like, OG, give us something. So I got to think about what I'm going to say to them. It's always going to be something that's real. It's always going to be something that's relevant into the moment. Play off somebody if they have any history with the team we're playing. Play off them, you know, if there's, you know, something that happened during the week or something that happened this past week. If that's something we're looking forward to trying to do this in the next game. I always try to use something that's relevant, use something that's current, and just be real with my guys. And I think that's why they appreciate me.
Always appreciate your time and insight. Thank you so much.
No problem, Dan. Thank you.
The Bengals Booth Podcast is presented by Bengals Picks and Ultimate Bengals. They're free to play with tickets and signed merchandise up for grabs. Find both inside the Bengals app. Way back at the beginning of training camp, I had a chance to appear on the NFL Network to discuss the Bengals, and this week, I caught up with one of the guys who was on the show with me that day. Our guest this week is Adam Rank from the NFL Network and NFL.com. Adam, you were on the set Monday night after a rough night for the Bengals in Cleveland. What was your takeaway from that game? Just a bad night for the Bengals, or something that concerned you a little more than that?
Well, I mean, I was a little disappointed because I feel like I am now a friend of the Bengals, having been there over the summer. I was disappointed, obviously, because I wanted to see, you know, this offense play the way that we know it can play. You know, less than 300 yards in that game is not indicative of what the Bengals are able to do. My first thought was like, well, Ja'Marr Chase must be the most valuable player in the NFL because, you know, it is really noticeable when he's not out there. But honestly, you know what? We see this way too much in the NFL. You don't want to get too excited when your team's playing really well, and you don't want to get too bummed out when things are not kind of going their way. And I think that at some point during that contest, you were like, all right, this is not going to be the Bengals' night. Myles Garrett was playing out of his mind. There were some things happening there in Cleveland, and you're like, you know what? This is one of those things that just happens in the NFL. I did my homework. I want everybody to know. But because if the Bengals win this week against Carolina, they're 5-4, which, not coincidentally or coincidentally, was their record last year. So let's not get too bummed out.
Words of wisdom, to be sure, from Adam Rank. So at 4-4, this was a team that you picked to win the AFC North prior to the season. What is your big picture take on the Bengals to date?
Well, I still believe that they're going to end up winning the division. I know that Baltimore is ahead of them right now, but I look at Cleveland. I think Cleveland had that one little gasp. They played really well on a Monday night. I'm not really convinced that they're all the way back. Pittsburgh already selling off players, so that's a good sign for you. But I really like this Bengals team. I think the pieces are there. I think the most troubling thing is the offensive line. You spend a lot of resources, and you're like, what's not clicking here? You know, Joe Burrow has been sacked the second most in the NFL this season, behind only Justin Fields. And we saw it on Monday night. Like, how can they not protect him? What is wrong here? And so I really wanted to see, you know, a better utilization of Joe Mixon. Like, he's getting the usage. You know, he's involved. He's there. It's like, why is this not translating? He was so fantastic last season. It's just not working. And so, again, I don't want to put too much of it on Ja'Marr Chase, but perhaps that's got something to do with it. Hayden Hurst really needs to get involved. But again, ultimately, and I know there are some injuries on defense, I still think this is a very talented football team. And I think that when you're in a high-profile primetime game, things get kind of overblown. So as long as you can go out this week against the Carolina Panthers, reestablish yourself, I think this team's going to be just fine.
Adam, prior to the Super Bowl last year, you simply put it this way: Joe Burrow is magic. What do you like most about the Bengals quarterback?
You know what? That is one of the things, like, and in those losses, you know, if you look at it, it does come down to Joe Burrow. In every game that the Bengals have lost this season, his passer rating's been below 100. You go over 100, you win the game. There are certain things, though, about Joe Burrow that it's hard to describe. Like, when you're watching it, sometimes there's quarterbacks that you just see that just have an it factor, that there's something about them, like, unafraid to make plays, can make plays, just the command of the team. Like, it's, you can look around the league and you see quarterbacks who are playing well. I'm not trying to take shots at Daniel Jones, but Daniel Jones is playing well this season. But do you ever get the sense that when you're watching a Giants game, like, Daniel Jones is going to win this for you? Even somebody like Geno Smith, who again is playing very well inside the system, you're like, yeah, he's winning games, and they'll go out there and they'll beat the Falcons in the regular season. They'll go to LA and they'll upset the Chargers. Like, I can see that kind of stuff happen. But there are times when you watch Joe Burrow, and you saw this in the playoffs last year, when you absolutely need something to happen, Joe can make it happen. We have friends in our life who are like that. You're like, yeah, this, somebody's reliable, but somebody's exciting. You know, somebody's going to make something happen. That's the one thing about Joe Burrow that I watch, and you're just like, you know what? When I'm watching these games, I don't feel like they're really out of it all the time, because, like, what can Joe Burrow do? Like, what can happen? And I think a lot of that does go in tandem with Ja'Marr Chase being there. But, you know, a lot of it is Burrow as well. And so I don't know what it is, you know, what happened on Monday night, where it escaped. But he has that it factor, which is unquantifiable sometimes, but he definitely has it.
We're visiting with Adam Rank. You can follow him on Twitter at Adam Rank. You have been known to occasionally wear costumes on the NFL Network.
So what do you think of Joe Burrow's game day wardrobe choices?
I love it. You know what? I think a lot of people, you know, appreciate it. I know that when he walked into the Louisiana Superdome and he was wearing Ja'Marr Chase's LSU jersey, you're like, well, game over. Just whatever. I don't know. Like, just it's over. Like, why are you even bothering to play this? And I think a lot of it, too, you know, lends into the aura of Joe Burrow, you know, the swagger, the smoking the cigar after the LSU championship. And I think, you know, and rightfully so, some people are on Twitter and they're making poignant or making comments about like, well, he gets a pass because of, you know, the way he holds himself. And I'm like, yeah, but there's something about drip, swagger. You understand, you know, when you see it, it's kind of like going back to the Ric Flair days of watching the NWO and the WCW when I was growing up, where you're like, oh, that guy just has it. Like, yeah, he pulls it off. He's wearing a fur coat. It looks awesome. When you see me on the NFL Network doing it, you're like, no, this guy doesn't have it. Like, it doesn't translate. But when you see Joe Burrow do it, you're like, oh, yeah, he's got it. He's got it going on. So I just say this. You got to protect that resource. He's a national treasure, and I don't like seeing him get sacked that much. I don't like seeing him harangued by Myles Garrett, so you need to make sure you're protecting him at all costs.
I thought you looked good in the fur coat, by the way. Dr. Rankenstein, I'm not so sure, but the fur coat was a good look for you.
Thank you so much. I try.
We're visiting with Adam Rank. As you mentioned earlier, you were here in Cincinnati for Welcome Back Saturday, that big training camp practice inside of Paycor Stadium, the day that Evan McPherson hit the 65-yard field goal. What were some of your takeaways from being around the team in person that day?
Well, first of all, I want to say that I love the city. When I was Renee Young, she goes by her real name now with AEW. She had tweeted out one time that Cincinnati was the San Diego of the Midwest. And I'm like, I'll be the judge of this. I live in Southern California. And then I went there and I'm like, yeah, I kind of get it. I get the vibe. I understand. The weather's obviously different, but I get it. I get where you're coming from. So I was enthralled with the city. I love the fan base. I love the enthusiasm. And of course, you know, coming off a Super Bowl appearance will do that for you. But then you got around the team. I really like the crew of players that they put together. And you get to bounce around some training camps and you get to spend some time with some of the players. And I really like the core of the players. I love what Zach Taylor's got going on. It felt like a really good vibe. I really was impressed, you know, with this Bengals team. I felt like, you know, again, when you're coming off a Super Bowl appearance, you know, things change. You know, we've all seen Major League. Charlie Sheen shows up the next year all corporate, but I didn't get that from the Bengals. And I really do believe that this team is very talented, and I still think that they're slept on. Like, that was the one takeaway, too, is, like, this Bengals team in training camp was better than the training camp team of last season. And I think the similar thing can happen as well, because there's way too many talented players on that offensive line to be giving up this many sacks. And I know it looks dire right now, and it doesn't look good. But I, again, when you look at the talent, you're like, yeah, it's there. And I know that it's disappointing not seeing Ja'Marr Chase play right now, but you still have a really good receiving core. I think that Hayden Hurst was a great pickup during the offseason. Love Tyler Boyd, love T. Higgins. And again, it's just a matter of getting it going. And Joe Mixon can't be held down forever. Like, that's an anomaly the way he's not getting it going. But again, we get paid too much money to go out there and overreact each and every week to these small little occurrences. But we know that when it comes time to shine, that this Bengals team has proven that they can beat anybody.
The Bengals host the Panthers this Sunday at 1:00. Do you have a key or keys for the Bengals to come away with a win?
Well, the one thing that you should note, and this doesn't bode well when you're looking at the division record, but three of the Bengals' losses, as you're very aware, come in the NFC North and or AFC North, excuse me. You got it, but they've been very good outside of the division, which is cool, but you got to start winning some of those division games, number one. Number two, though, you've got a pretty good handle on the Panthers. I think you're 2-0 against this Panthers team recently. And the Panthers have played much better football as of late, ever since they traded away Christian McCaffrey and they elevated P.J. Walker to their starting quarterback. He was a player that I thought, you know, was kind of overlooked. You talk to anybody who ever played with P.J. Walker who was down in Carolina, and I've had the benefit of working with Steve Smith and Thomas Davis. They love P.J. Walker. So I think that he's a better quarterback than people are giving him credit for. They have some quality running backs. I think Deontay Foreman is a lot better than people think of. Chuba Hubbard will return this week. And, of course, DJ Moore is one of the elite talents at wide receiver who's never really seemed to take off but has been, over the last couple of weeks, been playing exceptionally well. So this is going to be a test once again for this Bengals secondary, who last week had a little bit of trouble stopping Amari Cooper. DJ Moore is kind of in that category too. So they have to play much better at stopping DJ Moore. You got to play better against the run. Deontay Foreman is not Nick Chubb, but still, that guy is a good player. And if you allow him to get, you know, into that second level, it's going to be a problem. But I think we'll see a renewed effort from the Bengals this week. And as long as you slow down DJ Moore, I think you'll be okay. It's not going to be the walkover. I know a lot of Bengals fans probably looked at this game in the preseason and were like, well, this is a win. Realize that this is a better team than people are giving them credit for. But I do believe the Bengals will put it together. And by the way, protect the quarterback. That's the one good thing. You know, the Panthers have some talent on the defensive line too. So protect that quarterback.
Adam Rank, the Chamber of Commerce appreciates the kind words about our city, and I appreciate you doing this today. Thanks so much for your time. Keep up the good work.
Thanks so much for having me, and hopefully, you know, I'll be out in Cincinnati soon, and if so, we'll have to hook up and maybe go catch a ball game or two.
The Bengals Booth Podcast is brought to you by Kettering Health, the official healthcare provider of the Bengals. With more than 120 care facilities and 1,500 care providers, Kettering Health is committed to guiding you to your best health. Visit KetteringHealth.org to learn more. Now time for this week's Know the Foe segment. The Panthers are 2-6. They fired their coach, Matt Rhule, and benched their quarterback, Baker Mayfield, after 5 games, and replaced them with Steve Wilks and P.J. Walker. They should be 2-1 since those changes, but managed to lose in overtime to the Falcons last week, in a game that Carolina appeared to have won twice. Panthers radio voice Anish Shroff discussed that wild finish and the state of the team when he joined Dave Lapham and me on the Bengals Game Plan show.
There was a point where it looked like the Panthers were in control of the game, and then, you know, the Falcons get a pick six before halftime, and then toward the end of the game, now the Panthers are backed up. It's fourth down and long. They really had no choice but to go for it. They don't get it. The game seems all but lost. And then Falcons go 3-and-out. They got to kick a field goal. So that kept the margin at 6. And then 62 yards, P.J. Walker to D.J. Moore ties the game. Here you are thinking 34-34, 12 seconds left. You kick an extra point. You win. You're in first place. DJ took his helmet off, 15-yard penalty, assessed on the PAT, which is now 48 yards. It's a missed PAT. You go to overtime, you get an interception, you got another chance at a game-winning field goal. You miss that, and then the Falcons go down and score. So there were so many opportunities to win. There were so many opportunities where it looked like the game was lost. In a lot of ways, it was a microcosm of the entire Panthers season, probably within the last 4 or 5 minutes of the game.
You know, Anish, it seems like Steve Wilks, the players seem to love this guy. I mean, the energy, yep, enthusiasm, the level of play, it's like, okay, they feel like he got a raw deal, it seems like, you know, in Arizona, going 3-13 and getting blown up after just 1 year. And he's obviously been with the Panthers organization for a while, and now he's back. And it just seems like the relationship he must have with those players, because, man, they're playing hard for this dude. Am I off base there, or is it a fact?
No, there's definitely been a palpable change. And, yeah, this is no slight against Matt Rhule, but Steve Wilks, when he was hired in the offseason to be the defensive backs coach, came to Carolina with significant currency with the fan base, something Matt Rhule just did not have. Right. He was the defensive coordinator when the Panthers were winning, when they went to a Super Bowl. He's a Charlotte native. He played his college ball at App State. He played arena football in the city of Charlotte. So People within this city, the fan base, they were rooting for Steve Wilks. And really the unsaid, unspoken thought within the building when he was hired was, if the Panthers get off to a bad start, you might see Steve Wilks as the interim head coach. That's what transpired. And David Tepper, the owner of the Panthers, the day before Steve Wilks had his introductory press conference, said, if Steve Wilks does an incredible job, he's going to have every opportunity to be the next head coach of this football team. Well, what you saw against Tampa Bay a couple of weeks ago, where they've got Brady, and I know their offensive line isn't the same, and I know Brady maybe not, you know, might not be the same quarterback, and he's going through his own thing, and the offense has had its struggles. But that was a couple of days after they traded Christian McCaffrey. They had traded Robbie Anderson earlier in the week. They were down J.C. Horn and Jeremy Chinn, their top two defensive backs, and they dominated Tampa Bay to the tune of 21-3 and did so with a fourth-string quarterback. In my book, that counts as incredible, given where the Panthers were going into that game. And then even against Atlanta, they showed fight. They came back. There's a different feeling. There's a different temperature right now around this team. And Steve Wilks has a lot to do with it.
We are chatting with Anish Shroff, the voice of the Carolina Panthers. P.J. Walker is going to start at quarterback on Sunday afternoon. I saw this guy against the University of Cincinnati on a couple of occasions while he was the quarterback at Temple, and he was great. So I can't say I'm shocked by how well he's been playing for Carolina. But how has he kept the starting job, and has he been a legitimate upgrade from how Baker Mayfield was playing early in the year?
Yeah, the reality, Dan, is this. The Panthers' quarterback play for the first 5-6 weeks of the season wasn't just bad. It had been historically bad. You look at Baker's QBR, it's sub-20. It's one of the lowest, if not the lowest, since ESPN had been charting QBR. P.J. Walker was not supposed to be on this team if guys didn't get hurt. You go back to the preseason, Matt Corral, their third-round pick out of Ole Miss, Lisfranc injury out for the season. They were going to take three quarterbacks, Baker, Sam Darnold, and Matt Corral. Well, when Corral got hurt, well, P.J. was still the odd man out. They were just going to take two guys, Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold. Then Sam Darnold gets hurt, and P.J. makes the roster. Baker was not very good when he started. P.J. came in, and in the second start, the Bucs game, they really unleashed him. They let him throw the ball down the field. They didn't do that in the first game against the Rams. And he made some plays with his arm. He's got the ability to make some plays with his feet. Long term, who knows? There's still a lot of season left. But by far, P.J. Walker deserves to be the starter, at least for the foreseeable future, given his play compared to what quarterback play was before he took the reins.
Defensively, this football team is solid and sound. And I'll tell you, watch some tape. 95, Derek Brown just jumps off the screen. I mean, this dude, I'm like, he's making every play. And then I start looking at stats. 40 total tackles, tied for second most in the league amongst defensive linemen. 6 passes broken up. He's deflected 6 balls. That leads the team. It's number one in the NFL amongst defensive linemen. This dude makes play after play after play. Unbelievable.
You know, I'm glad you brought up Derek Brown because he does not get talked about nationally. And having watched him through these first 7-8 games, the biggest difference is he's been consistently good. He showed flashes his first 2 years with the Panthers. Remember, it's not like he's some undrafted free agent. This guy was a legitimate, bona fide top 10 pick out of Auburn. And they had been waiting for him and waiting for him. And there were questions even going into this season. Is Derek Brown a real star? Is he just a guy, you know, a starter on maybe a second division team? Do they know what Derek Brown is? He's been a bona fide all pro up until this point. He's been their best player, offense, defense, special teams. He's wreaked havoc. Even some of the turnovers that the Panthers forced earlier this season, Derek Brown was the reason they happened. If you go back to the Saints game, there was a scoop and score for a touchdown. The guy that blew the play up was Derek Brown. So he has had a hand in just creating chaos. He's been an agent of chaos. I've called him a human tempest on the air. And the guy, again, can move in a way that guys at his size should not be able to move. But he's been winning the point of attack consistently for the Panthers all season.
Anish, here's my final question for you. Carolina's 2-6. So you look at that record and you think, well, they're probably looking at a top 10 draft pick next year. But nobody in the NFC South has a winning record. You've got a winning record in your division. You're 2-1. You've got wins over Tampa Bay and the Saints.
Yep.
So is the feeling, our record's 2-6. So what? Seven wins might get you into the playoffs this year in the South.
Somebody has to win the division, and I'm going to quote Homer Simpson. default, the two greatest words in the English language. Now, there's a classic Simpsons episode where they're vying to go to space, and Barney Gumble gets drunk the night before, and they say, Mr. Simpson, by default, you're the guy that's going to go on this NASA trip. And he starts screaming, default, default, the two greatest words in the English language. Well, somebody by default is going to win the NFC South and go to the postseason. And right now the Bucs have not been inspiring. I know the Panthers have had their struggles, obviously. The Saints haven't been inspiring. The Falcons don't trust their passing game at all. It's a run-heavy team, and they're really beat up in the secondary. They've got the worst pass defense in the NFL. So nobody in this division has shown that they've got any staying power right now. Nobody really made any notable moves, you know, in the last day or so with the trade deadline there. So it's wide open. And if you look at the Panthers' remaining schedule, I think the Cincinnati game's an interesting barometer, because at the outset of the season, and at least early on, you say, whoa, AFC champions on the road, I don't know. And now you look at Ja'Marr Chase being out, the injuries you guys have had, especially on defense, especially in the secondary, you know, that game probably looks a lot more winnable than it did just a few weeks ago.
You know, Foreman has had back-to-back 100-yard rushing days. He's played well. P.J. Walker's played well. D.J. Moore has played well. And I think, you know, as a former lineman, I like to look up front at the offensive line and what you guys have done. Sixth pick of the draft, first round, sixth pick of the draft in this year's draft, to left tackle. The left guard was drafted in the third round to potentially play left tackle. He's kicked into guard. You got a free agent from the Ravens at center. You have a free agent from the Rams at right guard. And then your right tackle is a third rounder back in 2017. It's a solid offensive line. And I'm telling you, it looks like when you need yards, you have to have it run to that left side. It looks like that left side is pretty athletic and fairly dominant. Am I off base there?
No, you know, it's funny. The O-line a season ago was was bad. It was awful at times. It was a sieve. They weren't great in pass pro. They weren't great in the run game. Obviously, Christian McCaffrey being out exposes you even more. They had a priority this year in the offseason to upgrade that unit, bringing in Bozeman from the Ravens, who's actually just been starting the last two games, which coincidentally have been their two best rushing performances of the season. By the way, without Christian McCaffrey, Corbett solidified right guard. You guys saw him with Cleveland. Ike Ekwonu, who's the left tackle out of NC State, they feel he could be a franchise cornerstone and a 10-year starter at left tackle. This is a really good unit. The O-line right now is the strength of the offense. And even without McCaffrey in Deontay Foreman, it's a little bit of a different element. He's not going to give you the pass catching that Christian gave you, but he is a bulldozer. And he can move people, and he can run between the tackles. He had three touchdowns on Sunday against the Falcons. But the play to me, which really justified this staff's faith in the O-line, was a two-point conversion where they just said, hey, we're going to run it to Foreman right up the middle. And he got the 2 yards. When everybody in the building knew it was coming to Foreman and it was going up the middle.
Our thanks to Anish, and here's an invitation to join Lap and me at the Wings and Rings location in Beckett Ridge for the Bengals Pep Rally Show this Friday from 3 to 6. That's going to do it for this episode of the Bengals Booth Podcast, presented by Kettering Health, the official healthcare provider of the Bengals, by Bengals Picks and Ultimate Bengals. They're free to play with tickets and signed merchandise up for grabs. By Paycor, the official HR software provider of the Bengals. And by AltaFiber, future-proof fiber internet. Elevate your connection with AltaFiber. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to this podcast. And if you have a minute, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more Bengals fans find us. I'm Dan Hoard, and thank you for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.